Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is a true crime in real time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
It's a trial that we've been watching for a very long time. And here we are down to the final moments, the closing arguments about to be made in the trial of Richard Allen, the man accused of murdering those two little girls in Delphi, Indiana. And you have been on the ground every single day. We've been listening to your reporting over on Defense Diaries. Bob Mata, defense attorney, joining us. There has been a lot that has gone on since we last spoke, but I've been hearing you and the listeners have as well on what you've been observing. But as we come up here to closing arguments, pull us in as you always do and share what you've been seeing and what you think that jury may have been seeing as we get to closing arguments.
Yeah, you know, the biggest takeaways at this point, when the state finished with their case in chief, you know, I mean, there were no surprises. You know, we went into this thing kind of having the probable cause affidavit out there and with that concept that they had mere presence at the bridge by way of his voluntary statement that he gave. And then we had the unspent casing. Mm-hmm. And then we had various eyewitnesses that all gave different descriptions of a certain individual. And that was it. And, you know, there was a lot of chatter out there going into this trial that they had more and there was going to be big bombshells, and we didn't get any of that. So the case is exactly what we thought it was. But what we did have is the addition of these confessions. Now, I don't think that it added up to 61. I think ultimately what was introduced was probably more in the neighborhood of 30. But, I mean, 1 to 30, does it really matter? You know, I mean, the confessions are... They're a thing, but you know the fact of the matter is that the defense put forth a lot of effort in order to explain to the jury why you can't trust those, why mm-hmm. those are not confessions that you can take to the bank. They're not your typical confessions in terms of I have to show you, being Brad Rosie, who is one of the defense attorneys, exactly what Richard Allen was going through while he was housed in Westville Prison as a pretrial detainee, which they did, and they mm-hmm. did so effectively. So, you know, at the end of the day, with the state's case, I think that ultimately probably the most powerful pieces of evidence are going to end up being most likely the fact that their timeline, that they have Allen there when the girls were there, mm-hmm. And that they have his statement that he said he was there around the time. I mean, we have two timelines from Allen himself, which I think is problematic as well. Initially, he had told him he thought he was there from 1:30 till 3. When they get him 5 years later, he says, I was there from noon till 1:30. So mm-hmm. that's a problem for the defense camp. And, you know, because it's like, is it bad memory? Is it, he's like, I have the sense that they're trying to pin this thing on me, so I'm going to change my shit up, mm-hmm. you know, which in turn ends up hurting him, as opposed to just saying, yeah, this is when I was there. I didn't see the girls, you know, because we watched two of his interrogation videos, which were probably a sum total of 3 hours, and they went really hard with him with the Reed technique, which if you guys don't know what that is out there, it's essentially where the cops, you know, create rapport, and then they start telling whoever they're interviewing or interrogating a bunch of lies about the evidence that they have against them mm-hmm. in the hope that they'll be able to persuade them to, you know, just to confess to the crimes. He held up like a champion in both of those. He denied everything. They're going at him with the bullet. It's a match. We said, hey, we've got you nailed. You know, we had an expert coming in and do a voice analysis, and it's you. We know it's you. So cut the shit. You need to confess to this. He's like, I am not going to confess to something I didn't do. So you fast forward to, you know, the confessions. So you've got these two very different things going on. You've got him just prior to getting arrested with completely professing his innocence, saying that your evidence, whatever you have, is bullshit. Go ahead and arrest me, because the one thing I feel very secure about is that you can't put me in that crime scene, because I wasn't at that crime scene. I never saw those girls. If they have a video, if there's a picture of me on that, on that phone, he's like, it can't be me, because I wasn't there. I never saw those girls, you know? So he was very, very, you know, very, very like stringent in his denials and that. And then you have him being thrown in solitary and going completely psychotic for 4 months, you know? And at that point, you know, he starts saying, I did it. Most of them are general confessions. There's one that is not him speaking it, but is the psychiatrist, the prison psychiatrist who is treating him. She writes kind of a weird narrative where she says that he kind of gives this story. Turns out with that, you know, but can we trust her? Because it turns out that she had been researching the case for years prior to that. She was a part of all kinds of Facebook groups, including ours at Defense Diaries, which she joined the day of the safekeeping hearing when the defense attorneys were trying to get him out of Westville prison. Mm-hmm. And she joined all the other ones the day she found out that Richard Allen was becoming her patient. So, you know, it's problematic. It's hard to know what to trust with her. If she had reached a conclusion, like many people had in terms of this case prior to trial, in terms of innocence or guilt, and she's leaning guilty, if she's of the mindset, well, I can help secure this thing, and she throws in this van thing, which came about as a total pivot for the state in the middle of their case in chief, where they changed theories, claiming that Richard Allen saw a van, that he was originally going to sexually assault the girls. And then when he saw the van, he decided, oh, I just have to kill them. So that became their new theory, which no one had known about. Not really. There were a couple of creators out there that somehow claimed to have had the information, which leads to, you know, the leaking issue once again. But then you transfer over to the defense. They put on their witnesses. They put on experts to rebut the unspent casing. I thought their witness was very effective, you know, but like I've told you, you know, when you have a jury and you have a cop on the stand and that cop is sitting there saying, well, and she wasn't really a cop, but she worked for the Indiana State Police in their lab. And she says, I find there was sufficient agreement between Richard Allen's gun and that round. It becomes just powerful evidence. Mm-hmm. No matter which way the defense is able to rebut it, and if their expert's like, yeah, everything that woman just said is bullshit, it doesn't matter. There's going to be a juror that finds that that's compelling evidence. And in this case, it's unusual because the jurors get to ask questions, which I love. I love it so much because it really does, as a trial attorney, it allows you to really get insight into where the jurors' minds are at particular times. Mm-hmm. And many times they ask questions that you would have asked, you know, and they're ending up asking them where the defense attorney or the prosecutor didn't ask it. So you love it for that aspect. And it just lets you know just how much they're paying attention. And this jury is bright and they've been paying attention just diligently, taking mm-hmm. notes. Like, this is a very attentive jury. So from that perspective, I feel very comfortable with this jury. So you've got their experts where they're rebutting the confessions and they're rebutting, the unspent casing. And then they put on their data expert, their phone data expert, who was a former Fed for 10 years, worked with the FBI. And she ends up finding this bombshell that it was buried deep in the extraction that the law enforcement guys had done. This wasn't something that she found on her own with her own extraction. Mm-hmm. They always had it. Their guy just didn't know how to read it. He didn't know what the information meant. So they weren't able to keep it excluded because they were able to say, well, I can't help that guy doesn't know. Mm-hmm. Like, you should have hired a better expert to read and decipher what data you had, because it's always been there. And she ends up uncovering that it appears unequivocally that something was plugged into the headphone port, either wired headphones or an auxiliary cord, at 5:44 p.m. and then is unplugged from the phone from that port at 10:23 p.m. on the 13th. So in the defense's estimation, that is evidence that is somebody was there, either the phone was taken away from the scene or the phone remained at the scene and they plugged that in so as to have it not make noise. Because one of the things that that expert testified to was, look, when you plug something in that port, especially headphones, any sound that's going on that phone now is not going to be heard because it thinks it's going to headphones or through your car stereo if that's what you're plugging it into.
Yeah.
Interestingly, she also put in that milliseconds before that was plugged in, that the phone was receiving a call. So that would kind of indicate that somebody had done it that understood that concept, that as soon as you plug something in, it kills the sound on the phone, that boom, as soon as that was coming in, they plugged it in to kill the sound. So
as you have sound effects,
like that's where we're at with them. Yeah. Right. So I mean, that's kind of where we're at, man. And then we had the rebuttal today. The rebuttal was basically three witnesses. And in the rebuttal, just if you don't know, it goes state puts on their case in chief, defense puts on their case in chief. The state, because they have the burden, has the last bite at the apple. They are allowed to put on rebuttal evidence. That evidence is limited to only being able to rebut what the defense put on during their case in chief, meaning they cannot go back in time and say, oops, we forgot to put something in our case in chief, so we're going to put it in now. No, it's got to be evidence that is literally rebutting something that came out during the state or the defense's case in chief. So they had three witnesses. They put on a lay witness, one of the girls. They recalled her that was out at the bridge. She put in another photo that showed her at the Freedom Bridge when she arrived at 12:25. They then followed that up with a couple of questions and said, hey, did you end up seeing any girls or any other kids out at 12:25 out on the trails? And she said, no. And she said, more importantly, did you see a man out on the trails? Anybody, any man? And she's like, at 12:25. She's like, no. So that's, you know, in direct rebuttal to Richard Allen saying that he was out there from 12 until 1:30, because in his story, he gets out there and he walks from the Freedom Bridge, walks across it, and then goes out to the High Bridge, is out there for a while.
Yep.
And these girls walk the same path. So they put that on to rebut that. They put Brian Harshman, who was their phone over here guy, who was listening to all the tape interviews, or I'm sorry, recordings with Richard Allen and his phone calls to his mother and his wife. He came on and they basically put him on to try to rebut this whole solitary confinement issue that the defense had made such a huge point about, that you can't trust the confessions, trying to talk about his time and where he is housed now, Cass County, that he's still in solitary. And, you know, that frankly, his conditions in Westville were better because there, at least he had some human contact because he was meeting with Walla like daily for some amount of time.
Yeah.
And that he could scream through the wall and communicate with other inmates in the A pod. So to me, that was a ridiculous argument.
The luxuries. You know,
And so, and then the last guy was the psychiatrist who was administering the Halidol shots to him when he was psychotic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was interesting. And now where we're at is closing arguments tomorrow. Yep. And then it goes to the jury, man.
The big question I've had, and I think a lot of people, since we couldn't hear the actual sound of this trial and you were there to hear it, the audio of those confessions that you heard, whether it was to a family member or to whoever, what did you hear? What was the sound? What was the feeling that you got out of those?
Zero effect. Like it just flat, monotone. Mm-hmm. Like there was no emotion in anything that he was saying. It all sounded just like, I did it. I did it. Mm-hmm. Hey, Kathy, I need to tell you, I did it. You know, there's just, there weren't the type of confessions where you're like, wow, that person he just really confessed to this thing. They were all general. And again, the primary confession that the defense is trying to rebut, in which the state is really leaning into, is an alleged confession that he made in the presence of Monica Walla, his psychologist that was treating him, where he gives some details. That's where the van comes in. She uses language claiming that he said that he was lying in wait which I just find hard to believe.
Yeah.
And also this concept that he said he was originally going out there to sexually assault the girls, sees the van coming up on the access road and pivots and turns out just killing the girls. So it's like, but what we hear is just when you look at it in relation to the time frame and you know what's going on with him mentally, you can't trust him. You know,
no.
It's like that will not be what convicts him. I think that the defense did a very good job of really getting into evidence exactly what was going on, the horrors of his confinement, that this is treatment that no American, I don't give a shit what they're accused of, should ever be treated like this in an American prison by your own government.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they tortured him unequivocally. Yep. You know, they put him in, they just isolated him, and they knew going in that he had major depressive disorder and high anxiety. Those were pre-existing long before the murders even occurred. This had been going on since childhood. And those situations wherein he has those coming in are exacerbated by the solitary confinement, which is what made him slip into the psychosis. And, you know, once that happens, once in your life, when you've got these two disorders already pre-existing, you know, there's a 25% higher likelihood that he'll slip into psychosis again just because he did this time.
Yeah.
So, you know, man, it's a frustrating case because we all want justice for Abby and Libby. And the bottom line is that this investigation was piss poor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the defense did a really good job in just showing what they didn't do, all the things that they could have done in 7 years and just didn't. And, you know, the overarching theme in this is the reality is that if they're able to get the conviction, which they very well might, is that this thing, I believe, is going to come back on a retrial.
Yeah.
And they're going to get their third-party culprit shit in because she should have never have kept it out. The jurors should have heard it.
I was going to ask that. Did they need to hear? Because from what, I mean, it sounds like there's a tremendous amount of reasonable doubt already into this. Would the Odinism at this point, had it been brought in, would that have created almost too much of a woo-woo effect and have hurt the defense and their case in chief just because it kind of goes out there? Like, it feels like it's really strong how it is right now. And I was very surprised by that based on how many restrictions were put on at the beginning.
Yeah, you know, and I said the exact same thing the other night, you know, because that was my mindset. I'm like, you know, sometimes in the law, when you're trying these cases, less is more. And are you muddying the waters too much with the Odinism thing? Are you creating a Karen Reed situation where you now have to try to convince 12 people that some marauding group of Odinists did this?
Yeah.
You know, that's a hard sell, right? You know, just like it was a hard sell for the Reed jury, you know, to buy the fact that these cops were all doing the same thing. So it was the same thing. Yeah. What I think you do is you pare it down. You pare it down to Elvis Fields. Mm-hmm. That's the guy who put himself out at the bridge that day.
Yeah.
That's the guy who was subpoenaed to come to court and apparently is running around in the woods freaking out, like now. So, like, I don't even think you need to bring in the Odinist stuff. Like, forget about that. Just bring in the third party suspects and say, this is the dude you should be looking at.
Yeah.
This is 'cause, like, in a case like this, where it's like just the skin of your teeth type of evidence against Richard Allen. It really is.
It's a
really weak case. But they're not giving the jurors any other alternate in terms of who else could have done it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why you kind of have to get that third party stuff.
Yeah.
Skip all the Odinism shit.
And
go to this Elvis Fields. He said this to two of his sisters. He had a knife that he kept for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bring in the fact that he testifies or he tells a cop when he's leaving, hey, if I spit on one of the girls, but I have an explanation for it, am I going to be okay? I mean, to me, that's a confession.
Yeah.
You know, you bring that in. You give that to a jury and then let them stew on it. Because at that point, they're going to say, okay, well, so you got Allen out here. The guy's got absolutely no criminal history, which, you know, may or may not matter.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also got him in a 30-year marriage with a woman that he loves, who loves him back, raised a daughter, who came in and testified that she loves her father. He never touched me in my entire life. Same with his sister. She came in and testified to the same thing. And you know, and you let the chips fall where they may, but if you give that jury the ability to say, man, this other guy?
Yeah.
Like, what about this other guy? Because Tony, in my world, most people that are going to go out and commit a double homicide aren't going to be walking through a trail system, allowing a whole bunch of people to see them before they commit the crime.
Yeah.
Typically, you're not going to see anybody because they are lying in wait. They're hiding and waiting till the girls are out there where there's nobody else that's seen them. Yeah. And then they strike. Well, so,
and they're certainly not raising their hand and going, I was out there. How can I help? Right. And Elvis Fields, we should know, never been charged with anything, correct?
Just, nope, yeah, correct. Never.
Just, we're nothing. Just the things that he's admitted to that have been out there in the public. It certainly raises a lot of eyebrows.
It does. It does.
Yeah. And deserves some answers. So many interesting angles to this. We'll see how the closing arguments go. And then hopefully we'll have our verdict sooner than later. Bob Mata, Defense Diaries. Go check him out wherever you get podcasts. And also on YouTube, you can watch his recaps every single day after the trial. They go in such great detail. Do check that out on YouTube.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
So they said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.